listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Thrilled to be joined by Bud Elliott of 24/7 Sports, CBS Sports, Cover 3 Podcast, Nolcast. Well, that's why we have a hard time getting a hold of him. As you can see, he's a little busy. He's redone his basement. It's another reason to check us out on the Miller and Moulton Twitch.tv channel, because his set looks tremendous. It looks like you're moving up in the world. I got to be honest.
Yeah. So I'm on CBS HQ quite often, which is an awesome streaming channel you guys should check out. Also available on Pluto on your smart TVs. And they're like, yeah, we don't love the checkered background, but the podcast listeners on the Cover 3 podcast did like the checkered background. And I just, this room, the layout's terrible. So I needed some time to really kind of experiment and figure out what, ordered a couple different bookcases, figured out which ones could actually fit here. Like, I mean, I can measure, but you know, which ones would look okay. And settled on this one, put some little YouTube, like Twitch streamer lights, you know, to backlight it. And here we are.
Very professional, looking very good with a little college football look and some old college Coke bottles in the background. But what timing we had, because, Bud, I wanted, but for like the last 3 weeks, I said to David, can we get Bud on for some time? Because this NIL and the transfer portal, now we've had some time to really sink our teeth into it. And then Nick decides to have a little, well, talk yesterday, which for David and I, we talked about this earlier, Bud, just your thoughts on it, because if there was ever a time to maybe keep your mouth quiet, Alabama's done pretty well no matter what the system is. Alabama complaining isn't a good look to us. How do you see, and what are the reasons why you think Nick did what he did?
Yeah, I think the motivations are interesting. I genuinely do think that Nick Saban cares about the health of the sport of college football as he thinks it should be, right? And like, go back a week ago, he made the comment of, we need to return college football to the parity that we've always had. I'm like, that is not a thing. We have never had parity in this sport. Like, it has never been a sport of parity. It's been a sport of pride in your school and sort of just, it's almost golf in a way, right? You're achieving versus your own expectations and kind of playing against your own resources to be able to have a good season, whether that's making a bowl game or whether that is winning a national title. I personally don't think that Nick Saban likes the idea of other people having recruiting advantages against him that maybe he didn't plan for, to as far as the timing of it. I'm sure he thought eventually this would probably happen. I'm not sure that he thought that Texas A&M would buy an entire recruiting class and beat him and have the highest rated recruiting class of all time as fast as they did. And I think maybe they were caught a little bit flat-footed last year in the recruiting cycle. It also could just be like, man, if you're that close to the end of your career, and I'm not going to come on here and say Nick Saban's going to retire tomorrow or anything like that, but I do think that, how much time does he really have left? Does he really want to adapt and learn a whole new system again? We've already seen him do that, switching to more of an offensive style game, which we know the sport is now. I think he's probably annoyed that you know, like, this is a new system and you have to change. Also, as Jimbo said on Sunday, people have been doing NIL for a long time. We just didn't call it NIL. I think Alabama had kind of perfected that, and now they have to kind of revamp their system of compensation.
Follow Bud Elliott on Twitter at BudElliott3. Realistically, I think most people listening right now, they understand the landscape. They understand where we were and where we are now. What's the next step, though? I mean, you know, what the NCAA came out and said 10 days ago, is that realistic? What we think something can be done with the recruiting transfer cycle. We think that could be reined in, that when you transfer, you need to transfer during these two periods in time so that there's some order to our sport. We don't see where the order comes from with the money. Do you?
No, because I don't think it's going to happen the way that a lot of the schools want it to happen. I mean, remember, the schools just want to keep all the money for themselves. 25 years ago, this month, the coaches had to sue to remove coaching salary caps that the NCAA tried to put in. Remember, they had these quote unquote limited compensation assistant coaches. So like, half your coaching staff was not allowed to make essentially a living wage. And of course, the NCAA lost that because it's pretty anti-competitive. And I don't see what's going to happen here that the NCAA can get done. I do think eventually we will go to a situation where college football is run by the major conferences in conjunction with the college football playoff. You're already seeing some major ADs start to discuss this openly. Gene Smith of Ohio State, you know, being one there recently.
But to be honest, isn't that basically how the sports run now?
No, it's not, because so right now Alabama gets the same vote as Liberty when it comes to voting on important issues, right? And that's a big deal when you want to move quickly to address large-scale issues, and honestly, issues that are not impacting most of the programs out there, right? Like FGCU is not losing a battle to whomever is in FGCU's conference right now over NIL, but they're getting to vote on things, right? So is, you know, Louisiana Monroe and, you know, App State are not facing the same issues that the bigger players in the sport are. And I don't think that these big schools are going to want those votes to matter anymore.
Bud, will this take the Big Ten dissolving their alliance with the ACC and the Pac-12 and really Kevin Warren and Greg Sankey being able to sit down? Because after the new TV deal for the Big Ten, what they're getting and what the SEC will be getting will be so much different than the other three conferences that they're going to be able to determine whatever the hell, however this sport goes forward, I think.
Yeah, I'm not really entirely sure why the Big Ten decided to have the alliance with the ACC and the Pac-12, other than it just wasn't involved in an SEC expansion, and I think they wanted to just kind of consolidate some power while their deal was going on. Now, they don't really need the ACC and the Pac-12 for anything. I mean, I guess maybe there's a fear that the SEC goes to a two-round conference playoff and follows through on its threat to just stay at four, you know, and we'll send our one champion, but we're going to have a two-round SEC conference title game, which would be pretty wild. But I do think that, yeah, you don't really need that alliance with the ACC and the Pac-12, because you're going to make more money per year than both those leagues combined, essentially.
He's Bud Elliott, 24/7 Sports, the CBS Sports umbrella, Cover 3 podcast, Nolcast. Follow him on Twitter at Bud Elliott. Three. All right. What, if anything's going to get done, and when?
So it wouldn't shock me if they try to bring some type of enforcement case against one of the schools that's been pretty brazen about the NIL stuff. I think they would most likely lose that. But it could set an interesting precedent in that the big conferences and the college football playoff could say, hey, NCAA doesn't really have any true jurisdiction, or, you know, like, they're just not effective here in enforcing their own rules. We want to handle our own rules. We want to handle our own enforcement, all this kind of stuff. So maybe they could use that as something to point to break away. There's sort of the idea that maybe they went ahead and pushed the NCAA to enforce this stuff as almost a poison pill, you know, to be able to get out. However, I think they would probably lose in court if they try to enforce that, because it's just pretty clearly anti-competitive. Eventually, I think that we probably get to a situation where you have some unionization, which is probably going to be a terribly weak union for the players, by the way. I mean, these guys are time limited in college to 4 years anyway. And then you collectively bargain with them, and you probably beat them pretty badly if you're the schools. If you're willing to just go ahead and get to that step, the players are not going to beat you very often, because they don't really have any true leverage. Like, they're not going to strike. They only have 4 years of college. So I think that's probably where we go eventually, but that's pretty far down the line. The transfer portal stuff, I think they'll get past. It's not an unreasonable restraint to say, hey, there's two windows in which to transfer, and maybe you offer some kind of waivers for additional, you know, transfer times if and when coaches leave outside those windows. You know, for instance, if your coach bounces like in mid-January after the windows close, well, okay, like that makes sense to let the guys out then. I think transfer window, we get past. Obviously, the scholarship stuff is going to go through. And right now, I just think we kind of sit tight.
And the scholarship stuff he's talking about is, it was 25 scholarships per year. They're not going to limit the number per year. It's going to be based on how many scholarships you have available. That just seems to promote more gray shirting and benefit the big schools even more, Bud.
Well, so you still have to be under the 85 cap, right? So the reason they did this actually, well, the actual reasoning for it was like Kansas played at almost an FCS level number of scholarships. Like they were at like 65, 67, FCS is 63 for like 4 years because Charlie Weiss screwed them up so bad by just going with all those JUCOs, a lot of whom really couldn't play. And they used all those spots. And so they don't want a school to be in a 4 or 5 year cycle where you are 20 scholarships below the max. That's just difficult. It's also, I think you can actually argue that probably is a player safety issue as well, to be that light on guys compared to all the other teams out there. So I think the two things we have to watch for here, one for the player side is, do you continue to have these guaranteed 4 year scholarships? And what does it look like when you have all these kids sort of being pushed out? Like, are these sort of, scholarship withdrawal review committees, are they actually going to have some teeth to them, or are you just going to let the schools push out whomever because they didn't work out? Which, hey, if they're employees, you can just do that. On the other side, I think it is going to be interesting. Like if you're an AD and you think you might have to fire your coach next year, you need to kind of put your foot down on some of this and say, hey, we're not taking 40 this year, right? Because you may not be here, okay? Like we're not letting you take 40, 20 of which are JUCOs in an effort to win one more game and save your job and screw us in the long term. I'm not really sure how many ADs are actually thinking about that, but for me, it's almost like you wouldn't let an NFL coach trade away his entire draft to just go for it one last year if he's on the hot seat, right? Like that's not good long-term program stewardship.
I don't know if the ADs have thought of that, and because the coaches will want to up and bring in a bunch of JUCOs and bring in a bunch of kids so they can save their jobs so that they can get the contract extension. But 30 seconds, because we're up against a hard break. Is there anyone who's benefiting so much more so now than they were a year ago? Or to me, it seems like it's the same schools.
It is somewhat the same schools, but you are seeing some schools that are able to rebuild this stuff faster. Like, I don't think you would see USC doing quite this well just with Lincoln Riley if you didn't have NIL, right? A&M clearly, I mean, if you go back a little more than a year ago, that was a pretty huge recruiting class for them via NIL. Hell, Jackson State got Travis Hunter.
Well, Deion claims he didn't pay for him.
Of course not, David. No one's paying for anybody. They're not getting the NIL money until they get to school. There's no pay-for-play going on. Don't kid yourself.
I don't think Deion paid for him.
I don't think so either. I think someone else
not
did.
Personally.
No. Yeah, right. More with Bud Elliott on the other side. Your college football questions. Text him in now or come into the Twitch chat room and get your questions for Bud. Miller and Moulton, more with Bud Elliott on the other side on the Florida Sports Network.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour. We have a handful of minutes left with Bud Elliott, 24/7 Sports, CBS Sports. So we want to get right to it. Do you think the ACC eliminates divisions like the Pac-12 just did? Because, there's big difference between 12 and 14 teams. I mean, you could have two teams meet in the championship game that literally have like two common opponents throughout a conference season. Do you think the ACC does it? And does it benefit Florida State and Miami?
I do think they do it 100%. Because ESPN wants better games. And you can complain about having rematches in the conference title game, but there are a lot of years in which the best two teams have come from the, what is now known as the Atlantic. And ESPN would love to get, Clemson-Miami twice or Clemson-Florida State twice, or if they ever both got their acts together at the same time, Florida State-Miami twice. Hell, NC State this year, might be a really good team. What if they run through the regular season undefeated and they have to play Clemson again in the rematch? Like, that's kind of what we had 2 years ago with Notre Dame and Clemson. So I think they want better inventory. They want a lot less of Pitt Wake in the conference title game. I agree with you about the competitive balance, by the way, as far as like you could have some really odd champions come through. I don't know. Maybe they solved that by having some kind of like college football playoff rating qualifier on there or whatever. They need to figure out a way to rig it just so that some team that runs an incredibly easy schedule that if you dodge like Clemson, Miami, NC State, FSU, Pitt, somehow, and you play everybody else. Like, that's not really conference championship worthy. From an FSU standpoint, if they get Georgia Tech as one of the three rotating, it's a win for them. That is the closest geographic opponent they have. It's a longtime rival within the league. And, you know, they like that's one of their biggest alumni bases. I think Atlanta is the third most populous city of FSU alums. So they would like to have that from a fan perspective. I know the AD was talking about how they'd like to play Syracuse annually, but that's not, no, I don't think FSU fans want to make that trip more than like once a decade.
Bud, really and truly, same question, Big Ten, because let's be real here. When you've got Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State all on the same side, if you don't think the networks would rather have those two teams playing again in December, I mean, we're all crazy, but what do you think the Big Ten does?
I think it is absolutely going to go to divisionless play as well. This really helps Maryland and Rutgers, by the way, and it probably hurts like Wisconsin, Minnesota, those. But protected rivalries, the Big Ten is fairly easy to do on the east side. On the west side, we went over this yesterday on Cover 3. There's like a million trophies. So I feel like we need to have the head coach of the school needs to sit down, and if he can't name the trophy, that does not need to be a protected game. I think they'll do it. Like, if you're who's Ohio State? If you really kind of only need
Penn
to protect
State,
two games, I think.
Penn State, Michigan.
I think
probably.
It's Penn State, Michigan.
And I actually think Ohio State, Illinois has been a dicey little fun rivalry over the years, but they may get something from the West, whether it's Indiana or Illinois. But yeah, it's pretty simple on the East side.
Yeah, exactly. On the West side, I mean, it's. Minnesota would probably claim they have a rivalry with Michigan, which
yeah,
know,
little brown jug, sure.
Yeah, right, exactly. But Michigan State's going to want Michigan as well, clearly, because they're not going to get Ohio State. I would think if you only go two, maybe you go three. Like with the SEC, I can see you maybe need to go four to keep some teams happy that think they're rivals with people, and the other opponent doesn't think it's a rival at all. The Big Ten, I think you could do pretty easily with just two or three protected games per school.
Well, certainly the TV networks would like it. And last we checked, the TV networks kind of sort of run the sport. Bud, we know you got to go. We thank you for making time with us. Maybe we'll check in before training camp, so to speak, in August. But all the best for you and the family.
Yeah, let's do it. I got SEC and ACC media days coming up. So maybe after that, we'll wrap.
Sounds awesome. Perfect. Thanks, Bud.
All right, guys. Be well.
Bud Elliott, 24/7 Sports. CBS Sports, Cover 3 Podcast, Nolcast, busy guy.
On the Cover 3 Podcast, for you college football fans, they are doing deep dives, basically a season preview, and he does about four or five teams per podcast. It is great stuff if you're looking to get your quick review and you can't wait another month for the Phil Steele book. That would be the way that I would describe it. It's really in-depth stuff on your college team. So look up what he's done. If your team's on there, it's worth the listen, no doubt.
One of the things we talked about during the commercial break was a lot of fans, more Gators than Noles, are upset that the Florida State game, because this week is a big week in network television. It's called Upfronts. The networks all go to New York, and they're pitching the media world and advertisers, this is what we have coming up in the fall. You know, please embrace what we're selling and spend money. And so ABC ESPN announced about 12 big college football games, and they included Florida State amongst their 10-12 biggest games of the year. But it is the Friday night after Thanksgiving, not Saturday afternoon after Thanksgiving. And a lot of fans for the Noles and Gators are upset about it. And I think this is one of the things that Miller and Moulton will actually agree on. Hey, at least your game's being put in prime time and prominently displayed.
You're getting a nationally televised game on Thanksgiving weekend. The eyeballs that are on that are huge. And quite frankly, no offense, guys, you're not in the spot to determine when you're playing right now. You're not good enough. Neither of you.
That game alternates which network has it. If Florida's home, CBS has control of the game. If Florida State's home, ABC, ESPN has control of the game. CBS has not televised Florida State since 2009. Bobby Bowden's last year as coach. Tim Tebow's last year as a player. So CBS has passed on this game a half a dozen times. And I know it pains the network to do it. It that game still resonates in corporate New York City. But they just look at the schools and the records and they go, yeah, sorry, we can't put that game at 3:30 on a Saturday. It's the same Saturday as the Iron Bowl. Can't do it. They'd love to, by the way. They really would. But they can't do it anymore.
Facts. I mean, just
I wonder, Mark, would the Florida State fan be okay if it was 3:30 on the day after Thanksgiving? Remember the UCF South Florida time slot there for a few years that worked really well? Do you think it's just the fact it's at night?
I think the fact that it's Friday, period. That they have to have Thanksgiving. And I think 3:30 might honk them off even more, David, because they'd have to get up earlier to drive to the game in theory. I mean, at least Friday night allows people to drive to the game, get there, and maybe they don't want to spend the night because this throws hotels into it. I think all in all, the game just being on Friday ticks them off. College football is a Saturday sport. They think both fan bases think extremely highly of themselves. And they should for all the great history that they have. But at this current moment in time, there's nothing there. And they got pushed to Friday. And I think they're up. I think they're upset at themselves, if you know what I mean, as they are with the network. Because I think deep down they understand why. They just can't believe it's happened.
Another fan base that has all been out of shape, you know, Fox announced about 10 or so of their biggest games of the year. And the second Saturday, I believe, of the college football season, they've got Alabama at Texas. That's pretty sexy. Well, Fox's thing is what? Big noon. That's 11 a.m. Central. And the Texas fans have already started an online petition and they're all bent out of shape and they're calling Fox. And Fox is like, what part of big noon don't you understand? That's our thing.
Well, they put Texas and Oklahoma at noon, right?
Well, and remember, they put the big anniversary 50-year Oklahoma-Nebraska game. Got the big noon slot. And everybody was upset that it was 11 a.m. local kick. And Fox is like, hey, we gave you the game of the week. Shut up.
Miller and Moulton, we thank you so much for listening. Right here on the Florida Sports Network.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Miller and Moulton, the Florida Sports Network, floridasportsnetwork.com. Thanks so much for being with us. We are very appreciative of that. David Dwork will join us at the top of our bonus hour. For those of you that are no longer with us at the top of the hour, make your plans accordingly. Little Panthers lightning talk may be coming at you a little bit from the Panthers perspective. You can download any part of the show that you miss at floridasportsnetwork.com. Longtime friend of the show, Mark Lai, kind enough to join us. PGA is already underway. Mark, it's David and Mark. How you been?
I've been fine. Man, I've been wallowing in the heat already down here, but I do remember the days in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and if you want to get hot, that's the place to go.
Well, it should be a little different in May than it is when they've had it there in August, and boy, like history repeated itself at least early. John Daly, your current leader at the PGA after birdieing his first hole on the tournament, so he is one under. Off to a great start. We'll see how that all plays out by the end of today, but a good start for the big fella. Mark, when you look at this tournament, who's the guy to beat this week?
Well, I think it's the guy that won the last major. It's Scottie Scheffler. I mean, he's the one that's on fire. He's got, you know, four wins and a major and, you know, just coming off a decent week last week. And I think, you know, the guy he's going to be looking at is a guy that's looking for the Grand Slam. And that's Jordan Spieth, his old buddy. So, you know, two guys at the top that are on form. Spieth, of course, wants to get that Grand Slam deal, which adds a little bit of pressure. But I also like another guy named Xander Schauffele in there. And so we'll see what happens. You know, this golf course is so different than when I played it. I can't get my arms around some of the new tees that they've put out. And I'm sure, Dave and Mark, that you've seen what they've done with some of these tees where they're actually crisscrossing and hitting over greens. And it's going to be a weird setup, no doubt. Have you guys heard about that?
Yep. They've added 300 yards. It was redesigned 4 years ago. They've shaved much of the rough around many a green. You played this back in 82. Historically, correct. Mark, even in a PGA, you know, this has been a tough course. This is not a course in which you often get to 10 under par to win.
No, and I'll tell you why it's so severe. I do remember covering it. Not only playing in 82, but covering it when Retief Goosen won. You guys remember that? The greens were so fast that they couldn't hold them on three of the greens, 10, 18, and 9. And so what they did is they moved the mowers up on those specific greens instead of, you know, making them, you know, 12 on the stimp meter. They basically moved them back to like 10.5 on those three greens. And, I mean, that's the severity. They can get really nasty if they want to. But there's so much slope out there. I don't really see anybody having an advantage over anybody. I think everyone's long, except for, you know, guys like Zach Johnson out there. And, well, Jim Furyk's not playing anymore. But I can't see anybody having an advantage. I know back in the day, and even when Tiger won, against Woody Austin, there were so many irons off the tees, so many position holes out there. So I felt like, you know, even the short hitters had a chance back then. Woody Austin almost did, but he, you know, it would have been a weird win if Woody Austin had won. I mean, I don't think they would be promoting that tournament as much if Woody Austin beat LT Gray. But this is a very weird place. It's up and down. There's a lot of elevation change. I remember being paired with Ray Floyd that week in 82. And he was, you know, it was a place where you had to chip, you had to putt, you had to iron it. I don't think you had to drive it all that well. But we'll see what these guys deal with. I haven't been on site. But it's a weird, weird golf course to me. You know, I love Tulsa, and I really like Oklahoma. You know, all the great players from Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, and great people there. But that, you know, Southern Hills hasn't been one of my favorite golf courses, even covering it when I was at Golf Channel. And I don't know why it's in the rotation, Dave. To be honest with you, I don't. But we'll see what happens. They're making it out to be a pretty good looking place. I'll tell you that.
Well, in fairness, this tournament was supposed to be at Trump Bedminster, and the PGA moved it. They came out on Monday when asked, hey, why'd you move it again? And they said, well, we did it after the events on January 6th, blah, blah, blah. Jack came out this week and said the PGA made a mistake. They never should have moved it. So Southern Hills, I don't think, is in the rotation. In fact, the PGA has mapped out like 12 of the next 15 PGAs, and it's not a part of it, but it was a late fill-in, if you will, Mark, for taking the place at Trump Bedminster.
And, Mark, it sounds like you're saying that past experience on this course won't, I mean, with what the changes are, how much does past experience on this course matter to you?
Zero. Unless you grew up on the place. Because everyone's, for the most part, I don't think there is a local player out there. Is there? Is there a guy that was actually from there that's playing in the golf tournament? I don't think so, unless it's the head pro or something.
The native Oklahoman, there's a couple of people after college who now reside in Oklahoma, but I believe, Mark, the only native Oklahoman in the field is Gooch.
Oh, okay. Well, you know something? That'd be a pretty damn good pick right there. the hometown crowd. But, no, it happens when we go to tournaments at places where nobody's played. I think it's the fairest way.
because then it's like, okay, it's like going to Harding Park. You know, Colin Morikawa, even though he went to school at Cal Berkeley, basically nobody played that golf course at Harding Park. I mean, relative, the 150 guys in the field, maybe five had played it before. So I think it's good to get in there fresh. It's not like going to Pebble where somebody's got a track record there, or even Bethpage Black where Tiger and Phil had it, you know, or places that we're used to going to all the time. So I think this is the fairest that it can possibly be. But, you know, guys, looking at the field, I mean, they used to promote and tout the strongest field ever. And I'm not bad-mouthing the PGA, but I'm looking at more names here that I have never seen hit a golf ball. And I've seen a lot of people play this game. But I'm seeing, like, well, there's a threesome I've never seen before. Well, there's another threesome I've never seen before. I really, you know, except for the big boys, I don't know who these other guys are. I know they're 20, you know, club pros and a lot of international players. But this is it's kind of a weird-looking field to me.
Well, you've already given us who you think's going to win. Tiger, obviously, back in the tournament. What are your expectations for Tiger Woods in this thing this week, Mark?
Not much. I just, you know, look. The longer he stays out there, the more great players there are coming in behind him. And he's had a bullseye on his back since, you know, he was 25, 26, 27 years old. So these guys are coming out behind him. And it's not that Tiger is regressing, which he obviously is at age 46, but there's so many good, good players behind him. And I look at, you know, Morikawa, who I give a good chance to this week. I look at, you know, Victor Hovland, and you look at Scotty Scheffler and all these young guys. So it's not that Tiger, you know, is necessarily getting worse. I mean, he's obviously, you know, getting older, and now with the leg and all this and with not competing, I would say a top 25 would be outstanding for him. I mean, we saw him at the Masters, and he said, you know, I can win, and everyone started getting their bets in, and I just said, this is the dumbest statement I've ever heard. You know, I can't believe that people are throwing a nickel on this guy. And I love Tiger for the tournament, but guys, you know, walking golf courses and playing them well, that's all part of the whole thing out there. You know, it's stamina. That's why Bryson DeChambeau had to pull out this week. He says, you know, it wasn't so much my hand. It was having the stamina to play. And so Bryson, I would say, is in better shape than Tiger, wouldn't you? I mean, except for the hand. And here's this big, strong guy, 225, 230, in the peak of his physical health, saying that, hey, you know, after a couple of days, I don't think I can get through this tournament, so I got to pull out. So, you know, unless Tiger's taking some sort of injections, I don't know. I don't know how he can expect to compete out there. I'm sure he'll have a good round or two, maybe, but I can't see him hanging for four.
Mark, what I think is hanging over the PGA is what is going to happen between now and the U.S. Open, which is the LIV Series event is going to take place in London. Right. And we'll see, I think, next week it'll start being made public just how many guys are truly in. Mark, what do you think is going to happen between now and the U.S. Open and the World of Golf?
My sense is that they will have a field at the LIV, and some names will probably surprise you. I mean, look, did you see the Ricky Fowler interview?
Yep, absolutely.
If I'm Ricky Fowler, I'm going, because he's not an exempt player over here. I mean, he's getting in by the skin of his teeth on a lot of events. Look, Greg Norman is not the villain here, all right? Everyone says, you know, Greg Norman hates the tour. And, you know, Greg Norman doesn't hate the tour. He loves the players. And I honestly feel that this is just another menu item on the smorgasbord of golf. And I'm for it, to be honest with you. I'm not against the tour. I'm for the players, all right? So I think if it's helping guys, like I totally agree with Lee Westwood, you know, he made the statement that, hey, you know something? 2 years ago when I played there, it was no problem taking their money. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they're the bad guys. So, look, you can think what you want. Will it destroy the tour? Hell no. The tour is strong. If they lose 10 to 15, even 20 players to this LIV, the tour will go on. It all depends on who leaves the PGA Tour. And already, we don't think that Scheffler's leaving. We don't think that Rahm's leaving. We don't think that Justin Thomas is leaving. But there may be a Bryson DeChambeau. There may be a Patrick Reed. If I'm a Patrick Reed, I'm saying, you know, this is a perfect place for me. Nobody knows me. They don't hate me. You know, Adam Scott in his 40s. He's not going to win much anymore over here. So I look at it for each guy has to make his decision on what's best for him. Would I do it? No, I wouldn't. But I can certainly see it fitting in to some people's mindset. Maybe if they felt like they were 35 and they were hanging on by their fingernails and they may just have five more good years, why not make it the most lucrative 5 years you can have? Because it's tough on the PGA Tour. And when they're handing out free money, Dave and Mark, like they are over there with no expenses, you got to at least pause on that one. And you got to say, let me see what's going on. And the venues really pretty much speak for themselves. The venues are top-notch, first class all the way. So that will get some notoriety. We'll see, but I'm looking forward to see who does make the jump. And, nothing against the tour, but they've had a monopoly, guys, and I've been part of it. I played for 18 long years out there. And do I love the PGA Tour? Not really as an organization, but I do love the players, and I love how they grind it out, and I'm on their side. So whatever, Dave. I mean, you make your own choices, but I think that Greg Norman has been made at the villain in this whole thing, and he is not. He's just the conduit to expand the game like they're doing everywhere in this world.
Mark, we always appreciate your time and your insight. Enjoy the PGA Championship from afar, and hopefully we can talk again between now and the Open.
You bet. Anytime, you guys. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Mark Lai, as he said, 18 years a tour player, played on the Champions Tour, broadcast golf for 15-plus years, radio and television. Call Southwest Florida home, and we'd love to bring him on Miller and Moulton. And you'd be surprised, you start going, and Mark, I know you're not, but golfers who are about 38 years of age and older and where their world golf rankings are, and you start realizing you're a half a season away from being Ricky Fowler and not being exempt, and then life gets really hard. The only reason Ricky's in the PGA is because he finished tied eighth last year, which gets him in this year. And he's 33,
I think. He's 33.
Miller and Moulton. The bonus hour is next. David Dwork, a little Lightning Panthers.